by the side, like a child in a skirt. Supermarket's loud and bright, and bow it down, does she feel warm tonight? Bow it down, does she feel warm tonight? Bow it down, does she feel warm tonight? If every angel's terrible, then why do you welcome them?
You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz on 101.1 FM, streaming on freakradio.org. And that last song, last two songs, were by Coco Rosie, who will be playing Coachella tomorrow. And they are also coming through Santa Cruz on Monday, April 30th, this Monday, and are playing at the Rio with Bus Driver, who is also playing Coachella. And that starts at 8. $13. This is a piece by Andrew Bird off of Weather Systems called Skin. Those last ones by Coco Rosie were off of not their most recent album, but the last one, La Maison de Montrève. And a bunch of other stuff coming up.
calling hidden in the sound, lapping currents lay your bow to ground. Fix your barb and bayonet, the curlews carve their arabesque, and sorrow fills the silence all around. You come and see. There's a harbor lost within the reeds, a jetty caught in overhanging trees. Among the bones of cormorants, no boot mark here, nor fingerprints. The rivers roll down to a soundless sea. Would you come and see? Come and
next on Free Radio, it is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides for 2 hours. It's going to be me and you and whoever else shows up or calls in. Expecting special guest, former homeless lack of services center director Doug Loisel, Coral Street director back in 2009 to call in and talk about the budget. If he's been able to get a copy of it, that's the budget that's been slashed by the city council. Actually, it was slashed by a cutback in grants, but let's say not restored either by the city council, by the county, or by any of the other agencies that are going to allow the majority services of the center to disappear on July 1st, except for the special programs that get special funding, although they make up a huge part of the budget, 80% of the budget. We're going to be talking more about that with Doug Loisel. He should be calling in around 7. You can call in any time. We're going to be talking about life on the streets, life for those who are pretty close to the streets, and various updates on transparency in city government, particularly around the Santa Cruz Police Department. So stay tuned and call in. 427-3772 is the call-in number, 427-3772.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance. significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And tip of the hat to Pins and Needles. Good evening. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, and I think I'm going to begin a rather serious time for folks who are outside, not just because an organization that has provided increasingly limited and repressive services is now being choosing to seriously slash back the services that actually go out to the broadest number of people, namely laundry, meals, the limited but least limited of all the so-called shelter services, the Paul Lee Loft, mail service, the stuff that folks who may not want to spend a lot of time at the Homeless Lack of Services Center at Coral Street might want to use and have been able to use. The stuff that was originally what the center was about that really requires very little upkeep. We're going to be hearing more about that from Doug Loisel, who was the director there for 9 months about 6 years ago. And that's going to happen at 7 o'clock for those of you who want to listen in or call in. Those of us who are concerned about not just this cutback of services, which is slated to happen on July 1st, I believe. I think that's what Jan and Thomas said, maybe sooner. But really concerned with the overall crackdown on homeless folks. I mean, something that's also happening at this time is going to be the ending of the exemption for the sleeping ban, which due to the brave and continued and persistent efforts of activists in the 2010 Peace Camp 2010 protests, which lasted for 3 months and resulted in a number of people going to jail for at least Gary Johnson for an extended period of time. Ed Frye, the attorney and activist, spent a couple of weeks in jail and then months under house arrest. His crime was peaceful protest in front of the county courthouse around the issue of the criminalization of the right of poor people to sleep, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere. And this, of course, continues to be the tool that right-wing gentrification, maestros, real estate folks, NIMBYs of all kinds, bigots on the city council and those who are simply afraid of bigotry, conservative staff continue to press for as a tool for the police department, the sleeping ban, which during that year, the city attorney, aware of court decisions in other places and perhaps public opinion, persuaded the city council with very little discussion or debate to pass an ordinance which said that an amendment to the camping ordinance said if you're on the waiting list for the Pauley Loft or the River Street Shelter, which I call the River Street Mini Shelter because I think it has 29 beds, you are immunized from the camping ordinance, and you're also you can have tickets dismissed, indicating that, you know, that why force everybody to go to get a letter showing it things that there was no shelter when it's common knowledge that there's no shelter every night for the overwhelming majority of homeless people. And, of course, this will be even truer on July 1st, and there'll be no armory opening up next year either, which only, again, deals with 100 people out of the 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people in the city. So this is a very serious issue, not just, you know, in terms of those who are fans of the homeless, of the center that is run by Director Janin Thomas, who's told me in an email finally responding that the Pauley Loft will be closing and they will no longer be immunizing people from sleeping ban prosecutions for the crime of sleeping outside when there's no legal place to go. It concerns all of us who are aware of an increasing crackdown in terms of more repressive laws, in terms of an escalation of the number of tickets, in terms of church services being cut back or made more repressive. I mean, the homeless lack of service center itself has this now, this elaborate gate system and ID system and security, that is to say, armed thugs patrolling the area as though there's some, you know, public safety problem when they're really concerned with more extensive control and crackdown on homeless people. It's a form of intensified low-intensity class war that is becoming more pervasive in Santa Cruz. So to take a break from that, as I said, let's hear what Brent Adams was doing. I guess it was last Saturday. Was it only last Saturday? I think so. When he did a clown boot camp, which actually only involved a few folks. Only a few folks showed up. I like the idea of people coming out in clown outfits to mock police abuse and the massive amount of militarization that continues to happen around the police department. He had an expert there, a professional who had been doing a lot of work in clowning. How to become a good clown, how to release your inner clown, and so forth. We're going to play some of that just to lighten up the scene a little, or maybe even educate ourselves on how to clown it up, because I think mocking the abuses can have a very salutary effect as well for both the people who are doing it and also for those who are watching. And one needs to remove the sense of fear surrounding these authorities. In many places, including in the United States, this can be done by more extensive and extroverted protest, in some cases rioting, but going out there and reclaiming your rights one way or the other, and reclaiming public spaces that have been taken by corporate and government agencies that need to be returned to the community and to the people. Anyway, let's hear a little of this, if I can find the proper audio here. And I think I probably can. Clowning around. Let's see if it raises a chuckle.
Still in the park. And there's a... Wow, is that a stork? My goodness. It's like one of the clown brigade. The sign that says help. And the ranger is still running around on his bike. Looks like he's...
What you're hearing is me approaching the clown setup, which had one guy with a series of clown implements on a bit of a podium in San Lorenzo Park near the Duck Pond. And what I noticed, as you'll hear, are rangers driving around, police cars driving through, one police car going back and forth, not throughout the whole time, but in the middle of the day without any particular provocation, just there as a form of pretty clearly intimidation to me. Now, maybe there had been a big crime wave happening that I hadn't heard about, but I'll take the risk of saying I doubt it.
Patrolling. There's a new construction happening over next to one of the restaurants. So we're talking with
Random.
And Random?
Yeah.
You see you have a Mickey Mouseketeer hat here of ancient quality, those ears, backpack, a stand, a plunger, a small devil, a colorful wig, a rubber ball. A rubber ducky. It's a devil-y ducky, it looks like. And I guess a couple of things I don't quite know how to describe. What do you call this sort of shiny ball?
Disco ball.
Disco ball, yeah. Yep.
And a Planet Earth yo-yo.
And a Planet Earth yo-yo. Now, what do you intend to do with these items? You also have a bow tie on.
Well, these are good for juggling.
Which you're now doing. I wish you could see this, folks. The man is an incompetent juggler, for sure. But a friendly one.
We have the incantation for the earth and the disco ball party, and, you know, when you trust your duck, your inner duck.
Your inner demonic duck?
Well, the demonic is really just an expression of the deeper angel, which is truly terrifying. But, you know, it's your shadow.
An angel that found his balls, so to speak.
Yeah, you find your balls and juggle
Spit
them.
Spit up against the Führer upstairs.
That's right, that's right. So, the shadow, the soul, the energetic center that drives us forward before the intellect gets carried away with itself.
I have to think about that. So I know that Brent told me that there was some kind of, we posted one of his usual finest advertisements for a clown boot camp. Now, where are your boots?
Well, the boots are in the closet at the moment, but as our first outing will be next Sunday, which is Gay Pride, we'll all be coming out of that closet in full regalia as closet clowns coming, you know, out of the closet, as it were.
Well, and Gay Pride is kind of an acceptable establishment event in Santa Cruz. Doesn't it seem a little tame for clowns who wish to, or should we say, lampoon, satirize, and hold up to ridicule abusive institutions?
Well, if you've been around long enough, you could tell maybe that Gay Pride could use a little kick in the pants.
So you think that they're a little bit too staid and conventional?
No, not at all. They just staid. Yeah, they're comfortable in Santa Cruz.
But, rigid, upper-middle-class, white?
I have to say, this is not a satirization or parody of gay rights or gay pride.
And I began to realize at this point that, or perhaps I just realize even now as I reflect on it, but probably then, too, that it's a sort of like the many sides of Brent Adams. Brent is a man who's a variety of projects over the years, ranging from flag burning on the 4th of July, not as an expression of opposition to American imperialism, but more as a demonstration of support for the American system, which purportedly has a wondrous First Amendment that allows you to burn the flag even while its drones burn people overseas. That isn't how he put it. That's how I satirically put it when I kind of had him in the studio interviewing him. But for him, it's a sheer First Amendment exercise. He was also instrumental in mediating the drum circle. And when the police were attacking the drum circle, Brent has a couple of sides to him. One is a very kind of mellow, communitarian desire to really make connections with the heart of the establishment in order to cause a sea change there, which I regard as fundamentally unrealistic. But, you know, it's something a lot of folks have. They neglect the fact that people in positions of power essentially have put their hearts in cold storage in order to engage in the business of running the machine, which is their main job, and it's what they do, unfortunately. And Brent has another side, which is very radical, and he's been that side has also come out in his attempt to assist in the Occupy movement, and his support for drummers on the street and civil rights there, in a number of projects, even though his recent success in the bathroom task force, I'm not quite sure what he calls it, but exposing the failure of the city to even to clean the one dismal porta potty that it allows homeless people to have downtown instead of access to the other bathrooms, and how miserably it's cleaned. He wasn't even asking for 24-hour bathrooms. He was asking for that the bathrooms be that porta potty be regularly cleaned instead on at least a schedule similar to that of the bathrooms that are cleaned in the parks and in the garages, which is every few hours. Apparently, this one, the Posner porta potty, as it's called, at Laurel and Front Street, so named after Councilmember Posner for getting it through, but declining to press for the more obvious and more sanitary and more dignified open bathrooms 24 hours for either in the parks or somewhere else. In response, I think, to his kind of work, his exposing this, Pamela Comstock, of all people, pressed to the staff to put into the budget items that would staff a couple of bathrooms 24 hours a day as a pilot project in the downtown area, for which I commended her in an email recently, although I don't know that that's actually about to happen or when it's going to happen or how it's going to happen. And it has to be said, the bathrooms are pretty miserable downtown. They've been turned into open-air peep shows in order to, prevent vandalism, masturbation, prostitution, drug dealing, all those horrors that we know have to be dealt with regarding homeless people outside, but which other people who are housed can do in the privacy of their homes all the hell they want. And it's also an attempt, I think, as part of this, frankly, this miasma swampish make Santa Cruz an unwelcome place for poor people by making it more difficult, by making it more gross for poor people. And that's the whole thing about the camping ordinance, you know, that people can be rousted anytime after 11 o'clock at night because they are immediately guilty under suspicion of a crime, which allows the police to search them, which allows the police to do all kinds of other things if they are, going to cite them for a crime. A citation is technically a non-custodial arrest. In any case, that's quite of a long, kind of a long riff. But what it means is that this clowning activity that we've been tuning in on here, and you'll hear more about, is actually just sort of an attempt to, I think, at least that's what Random, the clownmeister, was talking about. It's an attempt to, show people how to clown, and not as a political activity at all, but as a form of sort of personal growth and a form of awakening people to the happier side of things and relieving tensions. I think that's one of the things Brent had in mind, is if there are protests coming, he'll be talking about this. I don't know if we have time to play this audio today, but how as austerity becomes more clamps tighter on the throats and the bowels of poor people and middle-class people in this country, there are going to be more extensive protests and outbreaks, and police are going to be down there, so we need to have a clown squad to loosen up people on both sides and make sure they don't kill each other. I think, again, I think this is kind of a wrong-headed approach, although I like the idea of training people learning how to clown for different reasons, because I don't... it's no laughing matter. As Martin Luther King has said, you want to heighten and expose the tension, not to relieve it. And the notion being that you can relieve it as a form of a reform, to me, is always a way of avoiding, at least I've seen increasingly, I've come to believe it's a way of avoiding the deeper issues. So, how do we clown on? Well, first we play some more audio.
On any level.
Is there pretentiousness generally?
No, I feel that this is a clown army first step, first safe and accepted step toward more rallies, assemblies, protests as nonviolent activist clowns.
Now, have you been doing this in other cities?
I've been involved in assembly as a clown army in San Francisco and Oakland.
And what is what conquests has the clown army made in those cities?
Well, primarily just a third component, humorous, peaceful, nonviolent component vis-a-vis the police or city, police state of consciousness, and the people who also sometimes become irate, upset, angry. So the police are, the clown army is meant to be a panacea and a peaceful offering that stands sort of between those two components.
And what's the history of the clown army? Have you clowns been around for a while?
Well, clowns have been around from time immortal, time immemorial.
Neanderthal clowns.
Neanderthal clowns, yeah.
One of the primo Santa Cruz clowns just arrived, and he's beating on my stomach and attempting to tickle me.
Sorry, he has tummy issues.
He is also violating my space again. He's pondering and fondling my nose. And he has a San Francisco Mime Troupe t-shirt on. He's all dressed in black, except for the others.
I just did porta potty cleaning. Okay.
And he's just announced a porta potty cleaning activity. Have you washed your hands after your porta potty cleaning?
I use gloves, non-latex gloves.
Does Steve Plaich help you with your porta potty cleaning?
No, Steve Plaich only does it with a spray bottle. And he typically does that on days when it's already been cleaned.
What about Michael Posner? He was there, surely, to help you.
No, today it was Valerie and Lee. And a couple of days ago it was Rabbi Posner. Anyway, we're going to have to cut the interview short because I'm going to be working with Brendan here. And you can work along. Happy birthday.
Keep the interview going.
Happy birthday.
My mother's fault. I don't blame him. There you go. You see, the clowns are clowning.
Happy birthday.
Your email comes out. I had to limit it. It came out to four.
We'll leave it there,
pages,
folks. Because I have to learn something about clowning.
And I took out a little section, too, just to...
Yeah, isn't that beautiful?
So a squad car is slowly moving. And we will return to the clown scene, perhaps, in a moment. But let's take a musical break.
Come all you argumentative sods who like to chew the rag, who'll stand in a bar for hours on end and a beardy talking jack. Sit down and park your feet a while, give your mouths a rest, and I'll tell you about a dame they call the Guardian of the West. Her hair was the best that money could buy, her eyes were china blue. I swear they wouldn't have looked out of place on a frozen cockatoo. She'd a nose like the blade of a metal saw, a voice like a tungsten drill. She used it to bore the natives when she had a couple of hours to kill. When she was a puking baby arm, she read in a magazine about the royals and decided then she'd like to be the queen. But the job had already been taken, so she stamped her foot and said, if I can't be the Queen or the Prince of Wales, I'll be the PM instead. And so she moved from NW4 to a pad in Downing Street, a well-found joint where she and a bunch of deadbeats used to meet. And they'd all dance round the table, then have a cozy chat. And in between, she'd practice her elocution on the cat. The lady often said she'd like to have lived in the golden age, before the days of the unions and the national minimum wage. And she sighed when she thought how Hitler had smashed them all to hell. What he can do, I can do better, she said, and probably twice as well. And so she set out on the job of castrating the unions one by one, all except the ETU, and that had already been done. Teachers and civil servants, workers down the mine, needed a taste of the lady's whip to make him toe the line. The printers, they came out on strike, and she went for him tooth and claw. Nurses and firemen struck as well, and she belted him with the law. They may be gallant heroes when they're saving people's lives, but they're just a bunch of layabouts when they're asking for a rise. Well, the lady's reputation plummeted down into the red, but trouble blew up in the Falklands, it was jam and a gingerbread. Thank God for a nice little war, she said, this is Britain's finest hour. So a couple of hundred swatties died so she could stay in power. The day a Polish shipyard became a casualty, she rushed to see Les Walesa crying solidarity. Oh, stay with us, my love, he said, but she answered with a frown. I've got to rush back to Glasgow, dear, to close the shipyard down. She doted on brave Colonel North and all that he represents, and she stuck like shit to a blanket to her favorite president. And she's madly keen on bushy tail of the dear old CIA, and she carried a torch for Botha and General Pinochet. Once behind the counter in her father's grocer's shop, she sold butter and jam and flour and spam and everything else the lot. But now the merchandise has changed, all prices don't apply. She's selling the nation off in lots to all who want to buy.
And that's a song from the 80s by a famous folk singer, Ewan McCall, from his album Antiquities, and he's singing, of course, about Margaret Thatcher, and the president he's talking about is Reagan, and Bush in those days was head of the CIA, and moved on to be president. That kind of shows you who goes where. Let's get back, however, to hearing a bit more about how to clown, and your phone calls, perhaps. 427-3772 is the call-in. I should announce, and I'm going to kind of want to be focusing on this, too, the response of activists concerned with homeless rights, as well as restoration of an expansion of homeless services. And these are often the same people, but there's a different focus for different folks. Some folks are more concerned with restoring the homeless, lack of services, limited services, which were cut back, are being eliminated on July 1st because of the state cuts, but they're not being restored by the county and city, even though this is budget time, and now is the time that this could be done. At least there's been no indication that is happening yet. And there's a lot of us are concerned to have... The services, even when they exist, are happening side by side with criminalization of poor people, sort of an ongoing violence toward people outside, putting them in conditions where, as I said, to fall asleep at night to cover up with a blanket after 11 is a crime, and being driven out of public spaces with less and less need to conceal what's being done. Rules around the library that drive homeless people out or repress them while they're there, giving power to security guards to, for example, ban people from the library for periods of time if they fall asleep. Although, admittedly, I haven't heard a lot of this being done, but merely the setting up of these increasingly tight strictures is a part of this new mythology that somehow there's an evil alien group of ne'er-do-wells who have come to town, welfare Cadillac people who need to be cut off, just as right-wingers cut women off the rolls and Clinton under wooing the right when he was president, that's Bill Clinton, destroyed the welfare system or fatally compromised it in 1996. And there's a whole mythology that homelessness is really some sort of defect that people have, that you can only afford to help a few of those folks who are, you know, the most desperate types, particularly who, you know, clutter up the businesses when they show up. But the best to do with the other folks is simply deny them their rights and scare them out of town. And that seems to be what's going on at an increasingly fast tempo. Anyway, let's clown. I've got to get back to the clown. Sorry about that, folks. What I want to conclude with is that there's going to be a meeting Sunday following up on last Sunday's meeting at the Food Not Bombs, 6:30. The meal is from 4 to 6 at the post office, but there'll also be a general meeting to kind of discuss what to do next. And there's also plans, and there is a planned protest slash feeding in front of the Coral Street, 115 Coral Street Homeless Lack of Services Center on Monday at 10 o'clock in the morning. That's going to be a sort of a mid-morning breakfast that's going to be happening. It'll also maybe provide some other services. For example, I don't know if we got storage lockers. That's a long missing element out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center. It's mainly an attempt for the community to both vividly protest what's going on in terms of these further cuts in homeless services, but also to provide an opportunity for people to come together to possibly open up other alternatives and engage in more widespread actions that restore public spaces and establish encampments where people can actually go. There are encampments every night all over Santa Cruz. It's just they are threatened by police, people's property is stolen by police there, and people are driven away, given tickets, criminalized, and so forth. Again, not, you know, with in any massive, thoroughgoing way, but enough, because that would be rather costly, and that would be rather expensive to do. And with the the jails being packed, there's no way to do that anyway. But it's 10 o'clock on Monday morning and 10 o'clock on Thursday morning. There will be two meals at the homeless on the sidewalk that Food Not Bombs is going to be serving next to the Homeless Lack of Services Center. And you're invited to come down and participate. Sign up for the next round of what do we do next to restore basic rights to homeless people, to end the sleeping ban, and so forth. But now it's clown.
There, folks, because I have to learn something about clowning.
And I took out a little section too, just to.
Yeah, isn't that beautiful?
So a squad car is slowly moving through the park here. It's about 4:15.
This is just you and I. We'll just get down to business.
We're going to be observing both the real clowns and the clowns in uniform here.
Please resist a little bit for pride if you still want to do pride.
And there's a discussion happening as to what the objective is for the clowns in their next event. And I'm not sure if I'm an observer or a participant or a little of both.
Yeah, I do like that.
So we're getting into the real clown stuff here.
Robert.
Brandon Rendon, and Brent is... Please, continue.
Okay, all right. But the commentary is just going to slow us down.
I'm not going to say a word. Okay. I'll just whisper.
Zeno Ensemble, Umo.
Zeno!
Umo Ensemble.
Brandon is giving his credentials.
Brazilian for smoke.
He's done a lot of clowning.
And San Francisco buffoons. Yep.
I've done some work with non-clowning group Art and Revolution Santa Cruz. That's about it. And I've taken one of his workshops, which was an archetypal sort of a play group. We got almost to the end, and I'm hoping that what we can achieve with this grouping as it builds is bridging the gap to something that I never really got out of that group, which was we did all kinds of... I'm sorry, butt in on you.
No.
Theory, then we were doing exercises, and for me, I went infinitely deep into the exercises. In fact, I grew a lot in that. I can't remember who else was there. But anyway, but what we didn't get to, and I think we ended up having issues with, was then we were like going, hey, okay, now we're going to have a performance. And I didn't have a lot of performance, even though we did the workshop. I wish we could spend a couple more weeks just acting and inhabiting that, because I still wasn't. So I hope, so the clowning thing, letting go, remaining in cult, and you put it in a different way. is being in that space of the clown. So there's techniques you're going to talk about, all kinds of really awesome ones I really like.
Mm-hmm.
And then
we'll get back to you.
And then don't stop now. Kicking out of the clown experience, nonetheless, Random here has some thoughts about what to look for when next you see him and his associates clowning.
Yes, yes, yes. Be on the lookout for some rogue clowns a la Army Brigade at Gay Pride next Sunday, June 7th, or 6th maybe.
Probably.
We'll be keeping the peace and coming out of the closet as clowns and celebrating the divine infinite zest for zeal and life and joy that tis in the heart of all mankind.
No sexual gestures that might alarm the children or the older folks.
Well, as long as we don't offend the gay. Lesbian, transgendered, bisexual, community. We are them, they is us.
What about the issue of class in the gay community? That might offend some people if you should pointed out the classist problems that all communities have, and that includes the gay community.
Could you repeat the question?
In other words, treating poor people like shit and having their noses in the air. That's and because they're, you know, so much better, wealthier, more knowledgeable, and better dressed.
Well, true. But I have a plunger attached to my head right
You're
now.
You're ruining the environment! That's a police car that just passed by.
I see that, yes. They're stirring up dust.
Stop screwing
disturbing,
up the grass!
Disturbing the ducks. And the great herring that's standing on the stage is still there, nonplussed and non-annoyed.
Take the ranger with you, please!
But how can I offend anyone when I myself have a plunger stuck to my head? I mean, plunger
if
is...
If you masturbate while doing it, you probably would.
There's no masturbation in any way coming or going.
I would hope not.
Now or at the Gay Pride Festival parade. I would argue that the plunger is an international and universal symbol for plunging. And nothing
That's
more.
That's very true. You know, your insights have often, they kind of go beneath the surface. You might, they kind of go deep down into the subject.
No. Well, they're trans deep. They're over simple. They transcend intelligence by being pure kisses. Kiss. Keep it simple, stupid.
Okay. Of course, you know, I'm always concerned about the taboos that we need to cross in order to liberate ourselves still further. And one of those is a sexual taboo, and I'm not very good at that myself. Another one is the belief that everything's rosy in the community, even though guys like the police are driving by and the rangers harassing poor people in the park. And the gay community doesn't do shit about this. This bothers me. And so, you know, they have their nice parades, and I tend to be
so
concerned about this.
So you got some fish to fry then.
I do,
really
I do.
You're referring to your own bag here,
well,
I think.
To some extent.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well.
Back to the clown army.
Yeah, to the clown army. Please go.
Okay. I just have a multi-year relationship with the recording device.
Right. Well, there's some rangers. Might get them involved in the clown army. That would be
would you
fun.
All like to join the clown army?
See, now that's right.
No, I'd probably get back to the ranger station and go home tonight.
Well, I think they're already part of the clown army. They just don't know
it. We want you to go home. We just want you to have a clown nose.
You see, I think it's the community, not me, Random, that have the issues. And I think people who avoid the issues are the ones who have the issues.
Yeah, you can be a closet
So that's clown. What I would respond to what you just said.
He's automatically going to be a closet clown.
Oh.
So,
hey, how many homeless have you harassed today?
A presence at rallies, assemblies, peaceful assembly, and protests that may, in fact, involve upset on either the people's part or the police, securities, and private businesses, industries, whatever form of oppression or potential oppression that may take issue with.
Yeah.
So sort of a mellowing influence.
So I've been in protests for years and years. I've been in protests for years. Again, I want to encourage you not to have that dominate the flow of information, please. I respect it, but I just want to get through.
Here's my tape
of this.
My audio device.
Okay. So my thing, yes, you know, I've been collecting hundreds and hundreds of protests of violent confrontation photographs, and I've been focusing on what's coming with the austerity measures of the future,
Brent
Black
Adams.
Lives Matter, and things are going from bad to worse, especially with the Homeless Services Center closing and various things like that. So what does the protest culture look like in the future? Let's say next year, something we can't even foresee is coming. We're going to have people facing riot gear, and even the Bearcat and things like that. Right. And so where my mind goes is I hate seeing that people are going to get arrested, people are going to get shot, some people might even get killed, tear gas, all kinds of things. But there's a possibility to bring creativity to this as the Clown Army or some other creative venture and de-escalate the situation, have fun, and try to bring the memory back that the reason we come out at all is because of the human family and the fact that we're in pain about something that's occurring. And so how do we bring beauty to that and be life-affirming and have fun where something is just not fucking fun at all? In fact, we can actually turn this very not fun thing. We see it done with a sound system. They can turn a whole wild, crazy, intense protest into a dance party, which is cool. But we're bringing some other clowns, because I think I'm seeing my friend Carrie Bell or somebody else. Clown! Carrie Bell!
More clowns approach.
And trying to have fun with it and de-escalate it and actually create evolution, an evolutionary moment from this thing to go. As we know, the 60s protests did actually, lots of things came out of that culturally. And we have another opportunity to take that, all that intensity and let that intensity be the spark for something fresh and new. And really, within myself, that's what I'm trying to do, is like bring myself out a little bit.
And you do.
2 hits of acid last weekend.
No, there you go.
Now that's a proper weapon for a clown, aren't you?
I camouflage clowns anyway. And it's around 10 to 5. Demonstration garden area closed. Keep out.
And that was kind of a few vignettes, mostly rationales rather than, these are visual clowns anyway. We made a number of jokes, but the main focus of and the really thing that drove me to this clown boot camp to get there is a picture of a bunch of clowns on a kind of a mock tank driving around as a way of showing how ridiculous this latest Bearcat expenditure that the police department snuck past the city council, or the city council colluded in sneaking past the community, is. So that kind of laughter really kind of encapsulates outrage in a way that is liberating, and I really like that, and that's why I went to it. This is more commentary afterward, I believe. Let's hear what I got to say.
I guess there are a couple of actual flowers growing here. A squad car is again slowly patrolling. It's a squad station wagon, actually, through the park. In this kind of, I call it ominous way, but I don't know, maybe some people like it. How's it going?
Not yet.
All right, now. And I'm taking off.
And indeed, these cars were driving actually not even on the paths. They were kind of half on the grass. And so something that if ordinary citizens were doing it, there would be protests because they're, you know, degrading the scene in the park. But this is, you know, the special privileges allowed to, you know, the people who are given the power to use lethal force in order to enforce such laws as can't sit against a building, can't smoke downtown, can't be in a park after dark, and are essentially unaccountable for their behavior. It's true in across the country, and it's true in Santa Cruz as well. And the sooner we realize it, the better. Musical break time, though, and you can call in. 427-3772 is the call-in number. In the studio with me, for those who are having meditation or medical problems, Doc Mike is sitting by. He actually is going to be one of the few last veterans of the Pauley Loft before it closes, as well as the Resuscitation Center, which apparently did you some yeoman service, Mike, when you were, you know, coming out of the hospital with a heart problem that you had, I think.
Yeah.
It was?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So these things are closing down in a month or sooner. In order that they can balance the budget. You know, it sounds just like austerity measures in poor countries. It has nothing to do with what the real needs of the community or the people are, run by bureaucrats who have nothing to do with the class that they're supposedly helping, supposedly serving. They are just, this is the problem with charity-type services, even when they're done somewhat more extensively under government auspices. If they're done by groups of people who have no real organic connection with what's going on in terms of being a part of that group, then what is their motivation to really meet the needs of that group other than intellectual? And I share that stigma too. All my broadcasts, I mean, I'm not, you know, outside. I'm not homeless. I eat regularly. I got a roof over my head. You know, I go to the movies. That sort of thing. I don't have to worry about the kinds of things that poor people outside do so much. So, I should be said again, all these opinions on this show in no way represent any homeless individuals at all. These are my opinions. If you want homeless people's opinions, go talk to them. See what they have to say. Mike here, for example, is houseless. He's out on the streets. He has opinions that in many respects are markedly different than mine. And I let him know about it by shutting him up at all times I can. But he's
succeeded so far. And the tide is changing.
He says the tide is changing. Well, we'll see about that. Let's get musical, and I'll be right back.
We're told that in this scientific age, we're privileged to be alive. Some folks disagree, they look depressed and say that we'll be lucky to survive. So the great debate goes on while they discuss the pros and cons of nuclear energy, the bomb and all that jive. But still and all, the fact remains that in spite of all the dangers, there are gains and many scientific knobs agree that nuclear energy means jobs. If you'll keep an open mind, examine all the facts, you'll find that it is true. Mrs. Thatcher says so, and the clever chaps who run the ETU. All the smart bus talking smoothies, and the CEGB groovies, and the monkeys in the British nuclear zoo. They never lie. They're always right. Their consciences are crystal clear, whiter than white. They're working for the underdog. There's no doubt that nuclear energy means jobs. They need uranium miners, architects and plant designers, engineers, quantity surveyors, dozer drivers and plate layers, hordes of navvies will be here. There'll be chippies, brickies, slaters, grab and big crane operators, and the skyhook lads who seem to have no fear. And when the plant is finished, then they'll all be signing on the dole again. Reactors don't need all this mob. A couple of dozen hands can do the job. If a pressurized reactor blows its top and radioactive clouds are looming overhead, and for 50 miles around the towns and villages are silent, glowing red, there'll be jobs for undertakers, statisticians, coffin makers, and demographers to estimate the dead. And there'll be jobs for those who're saved, like scraping dead folks off the walls and digging graves. And you can work, if factory trained, at making plastic bags for our remains. Can you use a pen or pencil? Are you handy with a stencil? Have you flair? You may be put to painting warning signs that say keep out, beware. Can you lie and still look truthful? Can you look both wise and youthful? Can you sound sincere when talking on the air? But you don't need a sense of shame. Just do the job and say you're not to blame. And you can still convince the slobs that nuclear is another word for jobs. The biggest and the most enduring source for jobs will surely always be plutonium atoms buried deep beneath the land and sea. It will mean your children's children and their children's children's children will be lumbered with responsibility. They'll spend their lives guarding the rods, which proves that nuclear energy means jobs. Tread carefully and live in fear. This job will last a quarter million years.
And that was Ewan McCall from his album Antiquities. That's called Nuclear Means Jobs. Great singer, been dead for 20 years now. His songs live on. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. In the studio with me is Doc Mike, who is also a client out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, or a diminishing and soon to be vanishing to nothing services center as far as walk-in people go. Mike, you got some reports from out there?
The only report that the main report I have is out there today, three squad cars showed up. And they were running around with their running around looking for somebody with a knife. I don't think they found anybody. So somehow, a report, they must have gotten a report that somebody had a knife or was wielding a knife. I don't really know. I couldn't get the information. Anyway, they came into the compound, ran around, and then they eventually left, so I don't think they found who they were looking for. But, you know, every day the cops go there, and they don't even park the car properly on the street. Sometimes they park it skewways, and they're coming there. They don't even have to, they can walk in there through the gate. They don't have to even say anything who they are, so it's like it's their territory for hunting, you know. And so, you know, I have a little bit of an issue with that, that they can just walk in and out anytime they want through the gate. Everyone else has to show some kind of identification. Anyway, that's the story for today.
Mike, what's the story? Do other people regard the police as who come to the Homeless Lack of Service Center campus, as they call the locked, gated area that requires ID to get in? I never have any campus in the world that required such things, but this campus does. How do they feel about it? How do other people, are they grateful to the folks, police are there? Are they neutral? Are they a little bit worried? Are they actively hostile?
I would say most of the people there, you know, they're poor, and some of them are not very well educated. And I would say most of them have some kind of a history with the police, you know, being harassed or being put in jail or whatever. And it's my guess here, because I haven't done any interviews about this, but they would probably not want the police just tramping in and out every day there, you know, because there's, you know, police instill fear in people, especially people who...
But you're speculating. You haven't talked to people about this.
No, I haven't done
it. You will, however, be doing a thorough research.
Of course.
And
of
I should your assignment, by the way, that you've had for 6 months to get the application form for the Pauli loft so we can make sure that people are allowed to show it to the police and say, hey, I'm on the waiting list. That's no longer going to be necessary, Mike. You're off the hook on that one because they're not going to allow those, you know, that there'll be no Pauli loft and there'll be no waiting list, according to Jen and Thomas's email to me yesterday.
Yeah, well, that really means they don't have an alternative place to sleep, so it should automatically cancel out their tickets. You know?
Quite so, but it won't, and that's the point. Although, you know, the board of directors or Jen and Thomas as a executive director there, I believe has the power to say, well, you know, the Pauli Loft is going to be closing, but we are hoping that we'll be getting some funding, so we're going to keep the waiting list open and keep your names on the waiting list, so we'll be active, even though right now we don't have the funding for it. I haven't yet confronted her on this, and I believe she's actually at a meeting tonight, the American Federation of Churches, and we have a Huffactivist, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom activist, is going to be there chatting with her, possibly in a more delicate tone than I would use about these issues, because I don't think it. She is the same director that is, she's had no objections to the gate. She's had no objections to the ID system. Admittedly, it was all set up, you know, ready to go before she arrived. But she made no protests about it. She's talking about their wonderful cooperation with the police, and she also favored the 24-hour parking ban that is about to happen around the...
How do you know that she favored that?
Because that's... Well, let's put it this way. The Sentinel said she favored it.
Really?
And she, when I continue to ask her what is her position, she declines to say.
Yeah, which is suspicious.
Which is, you know, I take the Sentinel because I can't get her, so I got to do what I got to do.
Right. That's scandalous. That's scandalous.
Well, you know, what's even more scandalous is the priority she's presiding over. I said before on this show that any person with integrity who had some, even a bureaucrat who's, you know, isolated because she or he lives differently than homeless people and, you know, doesn't, you know, essentially lords it over them and gives them orders and makes decisions for them. But even that kind of a person, you know, with a, you know, even a Father Joel kind of mentality would resign given this new cutback, or would attempt to change the priorities. Instead, it sounds like she's rolling right along with the program. She just sort of announced it at the city council meeting on May 26th. So I don't have a lot of sympathy for this person in this position, and I don't think anyone else should.
And
that's
how
I feel about it.
She's going to keep her $100,000 job.
I don't know if it's $100,000. It might be $80,000. I'm not quite sure. We've been trying to get a copy of the budget. I did request that of her as well and haven't heard back. But we may be hearing shortly from a former executive director, Doug Loisel, who now does social service work in Monterey and Salinas. He is slated to call in just about now. He may be calling in, and we can perhaps get an... he's going to try to get the budget. He also will... He has some pretty strong feelings about it. He was talking to me earlier, and he thinks this is really... This latest budget cutback, it has a number of ramifications which have not been fully revealed to the public generally, which I was just learning about from Steve Plaich in emails he sent me the other day. One is the resuscitation center that you used when you came out of the hospital is going to be defunded and cut. But also that they knew about this months and months in advance and could have shifted something from the $1 million, and I think this is the county funded project, multi-million dollar budget there, and have not chosen to do so. Let's see who's on the line, as if I don't know. Hey there, caller. You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz on the air, so watch your tongue.
Hey, Robert. Doug.
Doug Loisel. We were just talking about you, Loisel.
Okay.
I was mentioning in the phone call you were none too happy with the cuts in the homeless, what I call the homeless lack of service center or the Coral Street budget, and you regard this as part of a broader attempt to drive homeless people away from Santa Cruz?
Sure. I mean, of course. I would have no doubt in my mind that it's an orchestrated attempt between the Santa Cruz City government, maybe the county of Santa Cruz, and the business owners. They just want these folks out, you know. And what they're talking about cutting are very low cost I actually read the article today, and I looked over a few other things. They're cutting a tremendous amount of staff. And I don't understand why they can't reorganize and somehow use volunteers or something along those lines to keep those programs running.
Doug, that whole issue was brought up yesterday at the, and actually on Sunday at the several mass meetings being held to try to find some way to put together alternatives. Some people wanted to panhandle for at least volunteer to take the place of the services being cut off. Others said this is scabbing. You know, it's a form of, you know, denying. You know, you're expecting people to provide services that are. You know, people, there should be decent wages being paid for this kind of work. It's not the easiest kind of work to do. But there is going to be volunteer stuff happening in terms of at least meals. Protest meals will be set up at 10 o'clock on Monday and Thursday of this next week, which, by the way, you're invited to quit your job or take a vacation in Monterey and come on over and chow down with Food Not Bombs.
Okay. Yeah, 10 o'clock on Monday?
10 o'clock on Monday, 10 o'clock on Thursday. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be. It can't be inside the homeless lack of services center, so I don't think they'd let us in. And it can't be on the property outside because they've shown their driveway protesters there, too, even peaceful ones who aren't blocking anything, even those who are trying to sign people up to stop the 24-hour parking ban that apparently, even though I can't get the official word on it, and I can't even get Councilmember Micah Posner to send me the email that indicated that they apparently have denied the appeal of, you know, I wrote an appeal. I wrote a letter saying this is going to impact homeless people on the advice of Marlon Granlin, who said, who's in the planning, the Public Works Department. He said, if you turn in an appeal, we'll withhold this and send it to Transportation and Public Works Commission. He then went
ahead.
The minute I sent that in, he turned around and said, oh, no, I got to talk to the city attorney about this, and then he never got back to me. It's kind of a interesting approach. But, yeah, that's 10 o'clock on Thursday, 10 o'clock on this next Monday. And I'd love to have you come and talk about these issues yourself. We will personally provide you with a soapbox and a bowl of rice.
well, we'll see about the rice and speaking, but I would like to come out and support you. So I'll try to make it out one of those days. I did read the article in the Sentinel. I believe it was today. And, they put a lot of money into these projects, just to shut them down. You know, the Paul Lee Loft was a fairly major construction, project, and, it was probably close to, $1 million to build that. There was a lot of work that went into it, and now, you know, for whatever reason, I guess lack of funding, it's all for naught.
I know you were going to, we spoke earlier, you were going to try to contact Jen and Thomas or whoever is on the board of directors and get a copy of the budget, because relying on the Sentinel is always iffy at best. And while it's, you were speculating, I take it like Mike here is in the studio. Mike uses the services out there. He's a doc who's kind of traveling around, and he was using the resuscitation. Have you been listening to the show, by the way?
No, I haven't.
Okay, I just want to know, maybe not necessary to brief you on this, but he has his own show on free radio, and he has also been we used the resuscitation center to recover, and we both learned via Steve Plaich, a local activist, that the resuscitation center is also going to be cut off of funding as well. And moreover, that not only is it going to be cut off as funding, but the funding cutoff was known about several, I don't know if it's years ago or months ago, but in sufficient time for the county, if that's who's putting the main part of the resuscitation center, which it may be, or the city, could actually take action. One of the things that you said, you know, you talked about, you think this is, you know, an attempt, you agreed with me, this attempt to drive homeless people away, but you don't have any smoking gun, right? I mean, you are speculating on this stuff.
Well, I there's no smoking gun, but there's certainly a lot of circumstantial evidence. You know, if you keep closing down areas and you keep making a habitation, you know, virtually impossible, of course people have to migrate. And so, you know, as long as you harass them enough, and I believe that the Santa Cruz Police Department crosses the line in harassment at times, but tries to stay just right inside the line of harassment so that people feel just uncomfortable enough that they want to move forward or maybe want to migrate to another city. I'm sure that there's a concerted effort to remove the homeless from Santa Cruz.
Now, are you saying that this was the case?
And it's coordinated. Obviously, it's coordinated.
Were you saying that this was the case when you were executive director of the center back in 2009 as well?
No. I think there was more realization. There was the belief or the thought at that time was, hey, we all kind of have to live with each other. What's the best solution for everyone? And that really was the vibe that I got from everybody. I never felt pressured to keep. I would go and meet with the shopkeepers. I would go and meet with the people on Coral Street. You know, sometimes we'd try to reach out to them a little bit, do some, landscaping for them, try to be good neighbors. But there was never this, huge push like, you got to get out of here. And there was a real dehumanizing of the population. It was more, there's tension. We know there's tension. But I believe that the same Santa Cruz groups weren't as organized as they are now, or at least it doesn't seem to me they were anywhere near as organized as they are now. They seem to be hand in hand with the city government.
Well, it's interesting, that in today's Sentinel and in a Sentinel yesterday, there were several letters, and they all seem to come from the same template, though they're slightly different, and they talk about, it's maybe not such a bad thing that the homeless lack of services center is closing down because they really were too welcoming to these homeless folks. Maybe we can do it right the next time. And it's really sort of a way of helping our own local homeless folks and not those out-of-town agitators. Those out-of-town tramps, bums, hobos, freaks, skunks, punks, and drunks who are wandering through and, making it bad for everyone. These are a bunch of rotten apples. And once we clear them out, once we prune away the bad people, then, we can start afresh, start anew, washed again in the blood of the Lamb, that sort of thing. What do you think?
that's a joke. I mean, how can you can't separate out populations, and this is America. You can go where you want to go. You want to go to Santa Cruz, you can go to Santa Cruz, Go to San Ramon, you can go to San Ramon. I think that's absurd. First of all, how would you go about separating the chaff and the wheat,
Well, I can tell you what I've heard.
Go about identifying who belongs and who doesn't belong.
Well, Take Back Santa Cruz has proposed that, I believe at least some activists at City Council have proposed that this be done by demanding there be a residency requirement before services are provided.
How do you establish residency if you don't have a home?
Well, there have to be people in the ancient Celtic fashion of Anglo-Saxon England, where you have to have bondsmen who will swear for you, established members of the community, that you are, in fact, a long-term resident, a person who's lost their home in a foreclosure, perhaps, or someone who's so gravely disabled that we tried to get you out of town, we couldn't get you to leave. In other words, there could be, we can show that there are some people who have been here there's sense that show people have been here for longer periods of time. Why not, as the perhaps Take Back Santa Cruz folks, although I don't have somebody in the studio representing that group, so I don't want to misrepresent what they're saying, somebody of the mentality that says, if they've been here for more than a year and they can show that in some way, if not rent receipts, some other indication, maybe a voter registration from a year ago or something, then, we give them service. Or, but we can't allow every aimless traveler to, wash his shaggy beard in our services. What do you think, Doc?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of an example of a community that would only allow certain members of that community, and we're talking about a public entity like a city, you know, are there examples of, say, a library, you know, Watsonville Library, are there examples, and I don't know this, but where only Watsonville residents can use a Watsonville Public Library? And I would believe that anytime you would have federal funds involved with anything, whether you're fixing the roads or whatever, as long as there's federal funds, you can't discriminate against a group of people because they don't have residency.
But you see, we're entering a new society, Doug, where our people in Congress are going to make sure that, yes, you can still get federal funds, but we want local autonomy so that the best can continue to serve those who are truly needy. And as in the fashion with the medieval villages and Elizabethan England, exclude the wandering tramps, hobos, and vagabonds who are attempting to suck off the system. Your thoughts?
Well, I don't know about England, but I can't imagine that certain services would be denied for a group of people, you know, depending on residency, especially something as basic as food or shelter. You know, it's like, you don't belong here, so go ahead and move on. We're not going to feed you, and you can't sleep, you know, out of the cold because, you know, you haven't been here for a year. And the whole argument is moot because you couldn't do it. There would be no vehicle that I'm aware of that you could parcel out these folks. It's America. You know, you can walk around.
You know,
if you have a felony, you can walk around. As long as you've paid your debt to society, whether it's Santa Cruz or elsewhere.
That's another thing that's being demanded is police or record checks before anyone is allowed to use the services. And perhaps excluding those who are violent, have a violent history. Sort of like the yellow passport in Les Miserables, if you're a history reader and you like Victor Hugo. He wrote about Jean Valjean. You know, he went from place to place and they wouldn't let him sleep and they turned him away and so forth, according to Victor, although that's, of course, fiction. But, you know, I think we have to be very cautious here in saying, you know, you can't, I've heard the same argument used by Huff activists. Oh, the federal funds wouldn't allow that. Federal laws can be changed. Without too much difficulty. We don't have a Supreme Court that's particularly sensitive to poor people. They like corporations, but they don't seem to like the rest of us that much. So, I don't regard this as a wall of protection. At the moment, it may be that federal funds, but I mean, it does not mean that, you know, for people in the community, some people I've talked to, they say, well, it's perfectly reasonable not to allow services to people who haven't lived here for a while, because that way we'll stop them, the deadheads and the meth heads and the freaks and the goddamn hippies who are traveling up and down and the con artists and the bike thieves from coming in and despoiling our community and spreading needles all over the area. And this is the kind of stuff you're going to hear. We laugh at it. I exaggerate it. But that's what's making policy.
Right, right. I just don't see a vehicle for that level. You know, the vehicle that they're using right now are onerous ordinances and laws that make, you know, the whole attempt is to make people uncomfortable. And is so that they don't have to parcel out people or put them into groups or say you've been here. It's like they are going after the whole lot of them, and the way that they're doing that is just by trying to make their life miserable with laws and ordinances that target their comfort.
It also looks to me, Doug, we're talking with Doug Loisel, the homeless, formerly executive director of the Homeless Lack of Service Center. Now, which organizations are you working with, though you do not speak for those organizations at this time?
Community Human Services in Monterey and Salinas. And I oversee the methadone clinic.
Okay. I was also going to ask you for a report from those cities, but let me see if I can
sure.
zip back to this. I take it you didn't get a copy of the budget today, huh?
No, I called, and then I had a couple of other people call, and they were, you know, they weren't going to give it up. And then I looked on their website, and they really should have that on their website. All nonprofits should have that on their website, but they don't.
I do want to say that even when you were here in 2009, and frankly for the last 20 years, it has been the case, in spite of the. What you said notwithstanding, the objective has been, at least by the city staff, the laws, and the police, to make Santa Cruz an unwelcome place for people outside and people without money. And this is nothing new. It's just intensified and become more systematized. And frankly, I think the way they're doing it is not by implementing the regulations that say you have to live here to get into the homeless service center, or you have to do a police check to get into the homeless service center, or you have to brush your teeth twice a day to get into the homeless service center, but
right.
by cutting off the funding. So there isn't any issue. There's no homeless service center to get into. It's very simple, you know.
Right. Right.
But you're in Monterey. What's happening in Monterey? There was one of the excuses being used, or the reasons being pointed out, where the city council and the county can wash its hands here, is, oh, this was a federal grant coming through state agencies of $350,000 that not only is being cut off in Santa Cruz, but it's being cut off in Monterey and, I think, Santa Clara counties. What's happening with that?
It hasn't had any impact on our programs. Frankly, if it's not affecting our programs, I'm not aware of it. If it was affecting our programs, then, you know, I would, of course, you know, want to know, you know, what's going on and, you know, how is this working. But to be honest with you, I don't know how that's
somebody's suddenly not getting $350,000 in your area. Who's not getting the money that was is the question. If you don't know now, maybe sometime in the next few days you can, you know, find out. I would do so, but I'm too busy, you know, going to movies.
You know, one of the programs that's shutting down right now, and I don't know if it's related to this, but I know that they had lost some significant funding was CHAZ, which is Central Coast AIDS services, and anyway, it's basically our nonprofit provider services for persons with AIDS. And then I know that that's one of the programs that has been affected by recent funding cuts. I don't know if it's that specific cut. I don't want to say it is if I don't know 100%, but I know that they're shutting down.
Well, I appreciate that, and again, it's not really a quiz. You can get that information, and I think you probably are better situated than I am too, but maybe not. Let me know, and I will bring it up on Sunday, or bring it with you if you show up on Monday or Thursday at the 10 o'clock special extravaganza, eat the rich meal at the. I'm not quite sure what it's being called, outside the homeless. We used to have services, but bye-bye, baby. There's $20 million in the police budget, but not for you guys, sort of thing.
Well, you know, that Bearcat cost $250,000.
Well, it's a grant from the federal government, so the claim is that, you know, it's not money off. I mean, it does require servicing, it does require training, it does require, you know, lawsuits when they start running over people or ruining people's grass or, you know, whatever they do with it. But it's not money immediately out of pocket, so why should we worry? Hey, listen, it's pretty exciting. We can have it in parades, and although I think the police chief has said they won't be putting it in parades, so there's that.
You know, probably not in this case, but there are a lot of cases when you get money like that from the federal government, you can indicate that this is not necessarily something that we can utilize, but we could utilize money for something else. So I don't know if it's the case in this situation, but I do know that federal money like that, you know, there's some flexibility to it. So
it was money they got. I think that this was the military equipment program was applied for by the police department in 2013, we found out much later, through Representative,
right.
He's so liberal, Sam Farr, who later kind of recanted a little bit about it. But, you know, it's a specific military program. So here comes the Bearcat. It's coming in, and there's actually there's a petition now being circulated in a letter today's paper, or yesterday's paper, one of the most recent papers, by Sherry Connable, who, you know, is saying that we don't need this Bearcat, that it's, you know, we can send it back because it's, you know, I mean, it's, and I'm all for that, of course.
Right.
But
I did go down to Chinatown today and talk with some folks down there.
Tell us, what is Chinatown? What are you referring to?
I'm talking about Chinatown in Salinas, the homeless encampment area.
And how big is that area?
I would say it's got to be three full city blocks.
How many people would you estimate are camped there?
I would say anywhere between 300 and 500.
And how long has this been in existence, as far as you know?
Probably since Fort Ord shut down. I think that was in 96. It's been around for quite a while. It's where Dorothy's Kitchen is, Downtown Learning Center, and there's also Victory Rescue Mission that has probably 75 beds, probably 50 for men and 25 for women, and then they also serve meals there.
But the homeless encampment is not served, right? Or is it?
What's that?
Is Chinatown, the encampment with 300 to 500 people, served meals regularly?
The services are provided on Soledad Street, which is one street that runs through the Chinatown area, and then on the outskirts, almost probably a 90-degree circle, are encampments. And then there's, you know, some low-cost hotels in the area as well. But what they're doing, and I confirmed this with a couple of residents today, what they're doing in Salinas is they're slowly moving the homeless out of the Chinatown area for gentrification by clearing out fields and then putting wrought iron fences up and not allowing anybody back in.
So
they're slowly reclaiming this land that formerly was used by homeless persons to sleep.
And these are just vacant acres that are there?
Yeah, I would say it's got to be 5 to 10 acres.
And so
it's a rather large area.
And how is the camp organized? Have you kind of scouted it out much?
Yeah, basically everything revolves around Dorothy's Kitchen and some of the services that they provide down there. And then also, we have two methadone clinics that persons in that area come up to. The major issue, as with most situations, is the lack of showers and the lack of restrooms. There's one restroom during the day at Dorothy's Kitchen. There's a few at Victory Rescue Mission. There's one at the Learning Center. And then at night, all those are closed down, so there's no bathrooms at night. And there's only, I believe, probably 3 or 4 showers in the whole area.
So I guess we should send Brent Adams over there to with the bathroom task force. He's had some success in persuading even the most right-wing council members to be embarrassed. And they're opening up, they say, two of the garage bathrooms here in Santa Cruz for 24-hour use sometime in the future. And so, I had what's-her-name who runs Dorothy's Place. Do you know her name?
Jill.
Yeah. No. I had Jill on the air by phone. I think I talked to you about this. And she didn't know her budget's $2 million. And I said, you know, how much does it cost to put in porta-potties and, you know, washing stations for a year? She said $40,000. And
right.
I said, well, how about it? You know, get off your ass and do it. But, you know,
right.
Apparently she just doesn't want to even get into that. So I see a similar mentality over there, though perhaps not as toxic as in Santa Cruz. Am I wrong?
Yeah. No, it's not as pointed, you know. It's more for, you know, maybe, it sounds like almost not wanting to take on another project versus we're going to shut down services, you know.
yeah, it just, you know, it seems to me indecent not to have bathroom facilities that are relatively cheap. Even porta potty facilities, when you have such a huge budget, just as it seems immoral to me, as you were saying, that the homeless lack of services center, when faced with cutbacks, cuts out the essential services that serve the most people. I mean, it seems to me, I mean, I'm wondering what Jill's motivation is. I mean, is she afraid of offending her donors? Is she getting pressure from the politicians? Is she worried that more people will come if it's made a more welcoming environment? I don't know.
Well, you know, there's stratas among the homeless, and then so you have, you know, of course, the highest level of homelessness as far as public compassion is families with children. So you're going to, you know, it's a lot easier to make a case in general for the population. It's a lot easier to make a case for giving if you've got, you know, Susie Smith with her,
two
and 3 year old in tow.
I'm sorry, Doug.
Living out of their car.
Making a case to open up a bathrooms. You know, it even touched the somewhat distant soul of Pamela Comstock here in Santa Cruz. I don't see, you know, it tends to show me that even right-wing ideologues, who I disagree with on many things, aren't as beholden to the power structure as bureaucrats, people in nonprofits, so-called progressive politicians. I mean, she's been doing this for years, you know. I can't see how she wouldn't do this.
When you're selling or pandering to the right to get something done, you want to show how it's cost effective, right? When you're pandering to the left to get something done, you want to show how it's compassionate, you know.
Well, it's both cost effective and compassionate. Bathrooms are
a model that I've used.
But bathrooms are both compassionate and cost-effective. I mean, not to mention, you know, necessary as a health reality. So this, I'm sorry, I see them. I don't see this as a major difference between, you know, it seems to me a class issue rather than any kind of ideological issue. I mean, it's an issue of you don't want to, you want to make things as uncomfortable. You want to have a level of discomfort for homeless people, and whether it is done explicitly by cutting off services or implicitly by not providing the obvious, when you have such a crowd of people there, you know, if there was an earthquake, there'd be bathrooms all over the fucking place, as there were in 1989 in Santa Cruz. There'd be shelter services available. So this is complete bullshit. And when we justify this kind of stuff by saying, well, I have to justify this. Now, I know you were probably, you had this problem with the bathroom which you opened up at the Homeless Lack of Services Center when you were in here in Santa Cruz in 2009. You, before it wasn't open and you opened it up, right?
Correct.
And did it then get vandalized regularly and cost you hundreds of tens of thousands, a lot of money, or what?
No. Some of these things are so dumb, for lack of a better term. All it was, we already had an attendant there. All they had to do was unlock the door. And if people would go in and use the restroom, sometimes they'd make a mess, you'd clean it up. I mean, it really is not super complicated.
Yeah, so. Well, we know that leads one to, you know, go into the darker speculations that you were saying, you know, and when you're talking about Santa Cruz policies, and I say, where's the smoking gun? You haven't got a letter from the businessman saying you want to drive the homeless out of town? No, come on. I mean, they're innocent people just trying to be helpful and serve the local homeless better by getting rid of all the tramps and bums and hobos and meth users and bike thieves. You know, that's the line that's being used here, and I think that's a lot of people believe that line. So
there's an interesting thought, you know, that we elevate certain things that are of a natural order to the level of the sacred, right? We canonize them. But one of the things that we've canonized and made a religious, you know, a religious, we've made sacred is suburbia. And we don't want, suburbia is a sacred in our United States. It's a sacred cow. and then it, you know, that ties into this whole idea of family first, and you know, the breakdown of the nuclear family is the cause of all the ills in society. So you have suburbia, you have it elevated to the level of the sacred, and then you have these people who don't necessarily fit into a suburban environment come in, and then it becomes religious. It becomes, people have a religious fervor about this issue, it seems to me.
We're talking with Doug Loisel, former executive director of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. You can call into this show if you have a question for Doug at 469-3119, 469-3119. And Doug is speaking to us from, what are you, Monterey, Salinas? Where are you anyway?
Carmel.
Carmel, living in your palatial estates in Carmel.
But, yeah.
I know that another thing, when you were here at as executive director, you actually gave out your home phone number, as I remember, at least to me.
Yeah.
And you.
Yeah. Nobody ever calls me, so.
Well, you know, I can make it. I can call you late at night if you'd like and wake you up. And, you know.
Nothing would make me happier.
Yeah. 469-3119 is the phone number to call in here if you want to talk to. Doug and me and Mike. Mike is feverishly writing something to you. Mike, do you have any questions or comments?
No, I think Doug is quite an informed person. I'd like to meet up with him next time I'm down in that area if he's available. So do I get your number from Robert, Doug, or what?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Are you ready?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. And I don't care if people pick it up on air. Nobody ever calls me anyway. It's 831.
Okay.
241.
Yeah.
1758.
1758. Okay. Thank you, Doug.
Yeah, call me anytime.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah.
So, anything else you learned in Salinas? I know I've been pressing you in our past interviews to look at the. What's cooking at the Chinatown encampment, Dorothy's place. I mean, I, of course, go into my usual harangue about the bathrooms, but anything else you've noticed there? You've noticed this, you know, gradual, you know, pressuring of homeless people to leave, which, frankly, I don't see it so much as businesses, more real estate speculators. I mean, businesses,
yeah.
People who want to make profit off the land by, you know, it's of higher value because we don't have no Jews, kikes, niggers, anybody around like that. And the homeless bums, too. We don't want them kind either, you know, that sort of thing. So, we got, and frankly, you know, there's an interesting, the notion of that, by the way, regarding this being suburbia, I think that there's a new image. People want to see sort of a new cleansed urban environment that isn't suburbia, but that is, you know, it's got fancy, expensive lofts. It's got these gated spaces that are public spaces supposedly, but actually are gated. Like there's an article in today's Sentinel, actually today's Good Times, yesterday's Good Times, about Abbott Square being the new public space, as though having a privatized area that is very small being some kind of meaningful public space. It seems pretty ridiculous to me, and it abuses and just completely obfuscates what was done to the downtown. You probably weren't here in the mid 80s or the 70s in Santa Cruz, but you know there used to be brick planter benches up and down Pacific Avenue, and it was a winding street, thoroughfare, and it was, and people would come out from lunch and they'd sit on these planters, these brick area, brick surfaces, and they'd eat lunch, and a lot of foliage, a lot of trees. It was all destroyed after the earthquake via the police department and other conservative groups. Police department demanded there be complete line of sight all the way down, and they wanted to remove all the brick planters, and they did, and they put in, they said, we'll have plenty of benches, and of course then they started removing the benches, and now at least half the benches that were put in after the 1989 earthquake are gone as well. So
wow.
So
yeah, I can see that sanitized urban feel. They were moving towards that in L.A. as well.
I mean, they want to have this upscale, for the well-to-do scene, which preserves some of the, you know, colorful aspects of a downtown area. Yeah, you got a few street performers. How nice, you know. You know, oh, you know, maybe even one occasional panhandler, one or two. But you don't want to recognize, you know, the reality of the population is that people are being driven out of their homes, continuing by foreclosure and job flight. And... the various economic crises that we are undergoing every day, and people, and when this becomes visible, people start looking at each other and saying, "Why are we tolerating this?" Particularly the people that it's impacting. And I think, I mean, at least you would hope they are. I'm afraid a lot of that time that doesn't happen. I mean, one of the reasons we're holding these meals next week at 10 o'clock, the brunches at in front of the 115 Coral Street, Monday and Thursday, is to encourage people who are really upset about this shutdown of services, and more important, the ongoing criminalization, which, as I said, was going on. I don't know, you probably have a different view of it, but it was going on in 2009. It was going on 10 years before that. It's an ongoing process. But who are concerned about it, get together and come to some, you know, at least some more consciousness of what their possibilities of acting are. I mean, there's a possibility if enough homeless people on July 1st want to and house people join them, they can start their own encampment and they can just do
right.
it wherever they need to. You know, you don't have to have, you know, it's, and it can be done. I mean, we started an encampment. I didn't do it. I supplied the table. But in 1989, after the earthquake, when they were driving homeless people not just away from the shelter, that, or when it was full, when homeless people slept outside, they ticketed them for being outside the shelter. Just as I talked to someone who recently was arrested for trespass outside the homeless services center for sleeping there.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened before you in 1999 to a guy called Robert Steffen repeatedly, and it happens after you, and I wouldn't be surprised if it didn't happen while you were there as well. People getting
right,
you know, I mean, is that true? Did you have people arrested for trespass at the homeless service center for sleeping there when they declined to leave?
Not that I was aware of. But I don't recall that ever happening.
And I don't recall it happening during your tenure for sure.
Yeah.
The question
for tenure.
Yeah.
As it was.
Wow. Well, so what, you know, what are the thoughts do you have about this situation? What would your response be if you suddenly saw all your services being cut in Monterey? I mean, I'm not frankly usually a big supporter of, you know, funding bureaucrats to engage in services. Although I notice that when they start getting cut, and I don't like it, and I think that money, a lot of money, is wasted in that way. Maybe that's my, you know, some sort of Republican disease I picked up or something. But
go ahead.
So, what would you do if? It is happening in Monterey anyway. Apparently, I mean, certain grants are being cut off under this model that claims, well, we want housing first for everybody, but we won't give you any money. But instead, we'll cut off all the money to the emergency services as a model.
Right.
That's out the window. What's your analysis of that?
Well, you know, I think at that point, unfortunately, you have to prioritize the need according to. As far as organizationally, you've just got to organize the need according to the most basic need, which is food, you know, shelter, et cetera. Secondary programs like counseling programs, you know, you would probably want to reduce some of those. It's funny, I've been in social services for 25 or 30 years, and, you know, there's really only two things that sway funding from a, and it all comes, you know, from a, you know, as it trickles down from the federal and the state, the only thing, two things that seem to affect funding are the economy. When the economy is good, funding tends to be good. And then, of course, which political party is stronger in the federal government. And so those seem to be the factors. How it plays out on a local level might be much different. But the amount of money that you get tends to be only because of those two factors. and you know, geographic location where you live in the country, you know, how progressive is the area,
Doug, that's not my question. My question is, what do you do when they cut off your funding? Do you just say, oh, well, time to find another job somewhere, which is a reasonable response, by the way, on an individual level. Or are you, you know, are you out there in the streets? I mean, I know, for example, there have been a number of protests of kind of varied sorts around austerity measures. One was the Monterey 8 protest, you know, where they blocked the freeway. And they're facing, I'm not sure what the latest update is. There is a Alex DeRosi of Indie Bay does some good stuff on that for those who are interested. And then there's the monthly very token sitting band protest, which we at Huff have joined on one or two occasions that happens on Alvarado Street. But, you know, you can't. But what do you do? I don't know.
You're looking at two types of activity. One, you're looking at fundraising, and the other, you're looking at activism. You know, I would be stuck on the fundraising side, trying to figure out how we're going to solicit more donors, or you know, are there other grants or other monies we can go after through the government or through private foundations. You know, what can we do to supplement these types of losses? When you run a nonprofit, you normally want to have 10 or 15 different funding sources so that if one funding source stops, it's not a catastrophe. You never want to have one funding source that collapses. And so you would be able to absorb some of those costs in funding that's non-designated.
You know, if you can, look at your budget that you... I think we were able to get the budget from a couple of years ago, and you certainly have the budget from when you were around. I think you got the budget from a few years ago. Given that the funding sources are probably haven't changed a hell of a lot, except for this one grant. Maybe they have. I don't know. But if they haven't, give me how you would make changes in the budget. And I would ask you to do this not now because... You know, I'm catching you cold on this, but if you can call back maybe on Sunday with a very brief kind of recap and follow-up on this, that would be great.
Okay. Yeah, I can do that.
So last chance, last minute, Doug Loisel, he's here. He can answer all your questions. You want to know about methadone? You want to know about Chinatown? You want to know about, I don't know, whatever you're conversing on, Doug. You can be the expert. But it looks like no one, either no one's listening or people are too poor or too tired to phone in, I guess. But,
I will give you a call on Sunday.
I appreciate that. And this show does return 9:30 to 1 on Sunday for those who don't know. Thank you, Doug Loisel.
And hopefully I'll see you Monday or Thursday.
I'd love to.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Robert.
Bye-bye. And now it's time for one of those famous musical breaks that we're so famous for on this show. And, we're just going to break, and that's what we'll do.
Christ. Another weekend gone. Another Monday looking for a job. What's the odds on getting work of any kind? Finding a job, any kind of a job. Anything. Fed up to the teeth with doing nothing. Fed up with scrounging for a living. If you can call it a living. Lady, please give me a job. Mister, I'm willing to work. Just try me. I'll sweep the streets. I'll shovel shit. I'll do a bit of anything. Willing to turn me hand to anything. anything, 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 anything. Are they deaf? The bastards didn't seem to hear me. Looking for a job. What's the odds of chanting a million? More like 1 in 3 million, that's if they're telling the truth. Cooking the books, more likely. Sick of being on the outside, in the street. Sick of being last in the queue. Sick of being looked through as if I'm not there. The original invisible man. Lady, give me a job. For Christ's sake, mister, give me a job. Not just a scheme, it's a job that I need. Not just filling in time, filling up holes, playing with waste ends at chipboard. Sawdust won't fill up the holes in me days, in me life. Sawdust won't help me to live with me wife, with me kid, with myself. It's work that I miss, and cash in the hand at the end of the week. Another 12 months gone. What's the use of looking for a job? What's that a show? Where did it go? And how? Frittered away on the box. The box is eating my life. Tired of the bickering rows. Ashamed of the things that I say. And tired of being ashamed. Disgusted with the smell of the scrap heap, and scared of the thoughts that come into me head. Jesus, I wish I was. Unless you're one of the walking dead, you don't know what it's like. And I don't need some tallow face get some color shit from Bastardville to tell me to get on me bike. Lady, give me a job. Not next year, mister, but now give me a job. I'm at the end of me tether. Give me a job or I'll get on me bike and tear your stinking world apart.
Oh, it's around 5:15. We're on the steps of the post office Saturday talking with
Halima. It's May 30th, and I'm saddened, disarrayed, distraught, and quite upset about the $400,000 not being granted to the homeless shelter of Santa Cruz County and the wonderful Monterey County of California. And I am a homeless woman that faces danger in the community and robbery and pneumonia, and I'm disabled. And they have shut down homeless shelter services, meaning no food, no showering, no laundry, no place for the temporary housing of 30 days for people that that need to attain it for temporary relief.
And is it, has that happened yet, or is that about to happen?
July 1st.
So that's a month away.
15, uh-huh. It's, yeah, it's 30 days.
And what kind of services have you been using there?
The laundry, showering, food, and the Pauley Loft temporary housing at 115 Coral Street. And I've liked it. It's comfy, it's safe, it's reliable. What more can you ask for a local beach town, not born here, but raised here in Santa Cruz of 30 plus years of living in the sixth most expensive place in the United States. Excuse me, fifth most expensive place in the United States.
How long have you been outside on the street?
7 plus years.
And this whole time has been in Santa Cruz?
Yes. The first 2 years, it was more easily bounced with couch surfing. People change. I'm class of 1997. That's my high school graduation class, and it's a special time, and it's a stuck-up time. Class 97 is very stuck up, and I have not gotten the proper help from my equals.
Well, again, thank you very much. Anything you want to add?
I'm saddened, and I said that before, but this is just very pitiful and distressful. More people need to take the time to vote. I believe we need to keep the voting Democrat. Otherwise, this might have been.
Brown is the one who did it. He's a Democratic governor.
I realize. I don't know. Did not know that, but.
Well, I don't even know. I mean, I don't know who initiated this change.
We need to keep it Democratic to get the shelter to keep on going the way that it's going. That $400,000 for grants is a lot of money, and we need help. We need the community to be kinder to the homeless.
You know how much the police department is intending to get next year here in this community?
No.
$30 million. You would think they could kick down a small fraction of that for the homeless service center, don't you?
I'm asking for an Occupy in San Lorenzo.
And interrupting her call for an Occupy in San Lorenzo, and good for her. I think it's actually closer to between 20 and 30 million. So I want to correct that as far as I know.
Lorenzo Park, I'm asking for them to ban the stay away in the parks and making it comfortable for people with tents due to poisons by the animals there and the rodents. I don't want any diseases spread. I want people to be safe there camping to remain inside tents. I want the cops to be more comfortable with clean people camping that are raised here and have lived here 3 plus years.
Now, are you outside now tonight?
Not tonight.
Well, that's good news. Again, we've been talking with
Halima.
Thanks, Halima.
That's what I go by.
That's good. And you, would you like to say anything, sir?
Yes, I'd like to express sadness also.
And what's your name, man?
Dirk.
Dirk,
I'm not done. I have one more thing to say.
One more thing from Halima.
Halima. Yeah, May 30th, 2015. I'm stating that due to urinating or going to the bathroom, they don't have 24-hour bathrooms. If anyone's caught doing this, they get an outstanding $500 ticket. Plus, it's considered a sex offender ticket, which means that anyone cannot get a job in the state of California. Not good. It goes on their permanent record, sex offender, which makes them look like a molester, pedophile, or what else, a rapist. So we need it. It needs to be changed. It comes across as those things, and it's really, the fact is that they don't have 24-hour bathrooms.
Sucks the big weenie.
It's really disappointing, and it's a double standard. It's a setup.
Thank you, Halima.
You're welcome.
And again, we've been talking over here with
Dirk.
Dirk, you put aside your spaghetti to say something. You got some of that from the vets hall, and you're sharing a meal here.
Between venues.
And your
appearances deceive. There's
You're Santa Cruz. You're showing me your right foot, which seems to have significant sores on both your right and left feet. Several. How'd you get there?
Well, these involve Santa Cruz Police, and/or county, my nephew.
How did the police?
The Thor Optimus Scholarship, $20,000. When did you
get these? Actually,
may I finish my
please
thought?
Do.
Two in a school, also attended by committee meetings set over by the woman most responsible for questioning the way we treat old people. I'm 67 and shouldn't have been treated this way. I looked better than I felt. To cut back to chase, thank you, Alan. I don't know how to pronounce that. Whatever. Anyway, back to cutting the chase because you don't have a forever situation. This is a soundbite.
I do. I've got to grab something. To eat.
Right, but yeah, but I would invite you that way. I would at least send you there with your name.
I was going to head this way, actually.
Okay.
But again, we've been.
Why don't get a soundbite finish? It's less than.
Quickly,
sense.
Please.
Now, of course, quickly, please. There's a place down there by the transit center where, I've been.
I'm about to do. That's my sense.
I'm sorry, the quickly please gets me.